So Miguel's coming tomorrow. Well, when this comes out, he would have been here already. But he's coming. He's going to do a training, which I think is really smart because we have obviously really smart people in our e-com team, marketing, you know, accounting. But particularly, like, when it comes to e-com, marketing, and like, our creative team, they're really good. And they're really good without, like, without many of them knowing a ton about the industry or the brands. A lot of, like, any of the information they need in terms of, like, what style should this be is, like, kind of comes from us. So Big J set up, a lot of people to come through and do these cool trainings where people can, like, get an insight into the brand history, the different styles, like, what their aesthetic is, what the different brands are, the factories, all that. Which, honestly, Crown Heads might be a tough first one because he's all over the place. John is all over the place with this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, we have Blood Medicine. That's the Coronetta?
Yep, Coronetta.
He was getting the name wrong for a while.
Coronetta? Yeah.
Yeah, those are really good. Is that's this the new one. That's the brand new one. There's the Habano and the Maduro. The Maduro is from Ernesto. What's his new factory called? Well, not new factory. He renamed it. I think it's called, like, Casa Carrillo is his factory now.
Okay.
And then the other one is from Naxa. The Habano is from Naxa. They're both excellent. Both very, very good. And I'm smoking the Blood Medicine, which I was so happy that this got a big, like, a national release.
So that's a national release now. Did he announce that at PCA?
Yeah, I think he might have announced it at TPE. I got an email from Miguel.
Okay, yeah. No, I remember going down to Nashville, I think 2021, with Greg, and he gave us a 5-pack to bring back. And
this is also, I think
it was smaller.
This is bigger. This is actually a fantastic. John knows, he's good with sizes. I don't want to call him a size queen. But John just knows really good sizes. He does very Cuban-esque sizes with either thinner, like 48s, or I was working on something. I had to go look at, like, Cuban sizes for, you know, that they're selling now. A lot of bigger ring gauges, not like 60s, but a lot of, like, short, fat guys. A lot of, like, you know, 5.5 by 55s, 4-something by 52s, like a lot of short, chunkier smokes. It's just weird. Cubans, that whole, it's so different. Like, besides which I'm sure the process of making them is different as well, but the marketing, the sizes, the branding, the consumer bit, you would think that there would be, like, a ton of overlap, and there's not as much as you think when it comes to the Cuban industry and then what we call New World.
Yeah.
And I guess that's mainly because New World has been made specifically for the American market, whereas everything else has needed to have, like, this kind of more global appeal. So you can do, you know, like, this doesn't make sense anywhere else. Blood Medicine, like, Old West style doesn't make sense outside of the U.S. You can't really sell this in Spain.
That honestly, is true.
Spain you could, because from a lot of the spaghetti Westerns.
Yes, yeah.
But you couldn't sell this in, like, Austria. You couldn't sell this in China. You couldn't sell this in Lebanon. So the Cuban market, that's why.
But could you sell Cubans in Austria?
Yeah, they do.
They do? Okay. Yeah. All right,
Cubans are available literally everywhere but here.
Yeah, I didn't know that, honestly. Mm. I didn't know it literally everywhere but us. Yep. I know, I feel like
the
a lot
Cuban
of.
Cuban embargo of 1963.
63?
Yeah. It's literally everywhere but the U.S.
That's insane. I thought it was everywhere. Like, I thought it was just limited to only Cuba. I didn't know everywhere else.
Oh, no,
could
everywhere
do, but
buys them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, I feel like a lot of cigar smokers that I talk to, they've never really smoked a Cuban before, which is a little shocking to me. I feel like if you're in the industry, if you've been smoking for a while, you've come across one or two.
Yeah, you can never tell if they're real. Like, unless you're in the industry or, like, really know cigars, it's always hard to tell if they're real unless you're in another country and you're going to, like, a certified shop. Listen, I smoked one the other day. I smoked a Hoyo Special, I think it was. I have the tube downstairs. It was in the tube. It was fantastic, but it wasn't like something I've never had before.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. And I
remember I was smoking with you.
I do like the branding and how they and, like, their craftsmanship and, like, how they, you know, It's modern, traditional. Like, I actually very much enjoy it. But And it was an excellent cigar. It was the best cigar I had like that week. But it wasn't like, I don't know, I have to go find this. Yeah. I have to. It really, and especially.
It's not like when you had the Meat Carita and like you were like, man, no. I had to have, like, no. You had to have the Meat Carita. No. Like,
and also the price, I mean, the Cuban pricing these days when they change over their pricing model. I mean, it's, Tall Ryan was in Antigua and he was a little tipsy and he went to like an official thing and he bought a Cohiba and he's like, wasn't really paying attention, but it was like $140 for like one cigar. He's like, what? He's like, is that because like it was in Antigua? I'm like, no, that's, you probably bought one. Like they changed their pricing model to match up with Hong Kong. And so now, they're losing market share everywhere but Cuba, but they don't care everywhere but China,
mm-hmm.
but they're making way more money. I mean, they just upped all their prices. In some cases, like 200% on there was some cigars that went from like $25 to over $100.
Jeez.
Yeah. I know.
And Cohiba, they know that people are going to buy them too, right?
Because they were already selling them at that price in China, and they never had enough to fulfill the Chinese demand. So by price locking it globally, they're like, we're going to sell less to the rest of the world, but we're going to have that. We'll either have more available for China, or we'll be selling them at the same price as in China. So we'll be making, we're not losing out on any money. Cause it's like, if I'm selling this for 50 to you and 10 to this guy, well, I'm just going to make the global price 50 and then whoever buys it, great. You know what I mean? Now the issue to that is, you know, the demand for like these, you know, more domestics, you know, or more a new world can go up in Europe. I don't think it's going to go up to a point where we have to worry about inventory issues. It's actually probably in excess right now. You know, when we were hitting that kind of COVID boom.
Yeah.
A lot of overproduction from a lot of companies. There's a lot floating around out there.
Do you think they just, I guess, because cigars were on high demand in the first few months, right? And then they were like, oh, because no one knew what the future was going to hold, right?
Yeah, and no one
and
ever.
And then everything is expensive now, like everything.
No one ever anticipates the train ending.
Yeah.
And the train, which is silly to me from an economic standpoint, because the train always ends. Every time there's been a crash or a bust on something, everyone who's supposed to know about it is always shocked. And I'm like, but of course it's going to end. Like these trends always end. It's a like everything. Cigar boom of the 90s, the downfall of the cigar boom, the late 90s, early 2000s. And it was slowly built up, like correctly, until about 2019, 20, and then 2020 happened. Huge boom. And it's like, yeah, but as the rest of the world got back to normal, did you think that people were at home more? They were smoking more cigars. Did you think that that was going to be the case forever? I know us as a company didn't think that. No. Like we knew, we anticipated like in terms of sales, like what we were going to have to contend with after this. But a lot of factories just overproduced because they were trying to catch up. You know, they had these big orders from 2020 that they were still trying to satisfy. So they just kept producing more and more. And now, you know, now a lot of shot, you know, from what I heard, PCA this year, it was fine. Like it was okay. But, you know, the time of the year, while it's obviously not as hot and it's not during your busy season, so you can like leave your shop behind, most people didn't have the money to like buy big orders this year, because that usually by July, they're 2 months into the busy season. They've had half the year to put some money away for like the trade show. This is like, you know, we're in the, you know, the end of Q1 here. We don't have the reserves. Cause think about it. Once a year they go to Las Vegas and they spend a bunch of money. They've only had 6 months to save since up from then, the last trade show. And that 6 months was the slowest time of year. It was August, which is still good. Then September is okay. And then October, November, then do you get the kind of Black Friday bump? And then December, it kind of starts going down. January, February are
flat.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just terrible. So now, hopefully, my thinking would be, and this is never how it works out, because once people see X amount of money in their account, they spend it, myself included. My hoping would be is that now they'll have a full year to save up for the next one. But hopefully they don't see any like, you know, like, oh, well, you know, we have all this money and it's August and like, you know, usually we don't have this in our coffers in August. Like, should we go spend it now? And, you know, but I don't know. It was a weird time because it was only 6 months since the last one. It was right after TPE. So there was a lot of stuff already announced. So there wasn't, I'm trying to think of like brand new things that were announced. And I mean, the new Wise Men, even though it's a rebrand, but it's a different factory. So I'm calling that a new cigar. The Wise Men and Wise Men Maduro from Foundation are new. Altad has had some new stuff, new Teyamo, Midnight Twist. Do they have another Romeo? They had like a crazy fancy Romeo, the double Diamante that came in like the crazy, yeah. like 100 hours of cigar. I'm trying to think who else had something new this year, like right now. Aganorsa had the Arsenio. Romacraft had the new Cro-Magnon Broadleaf Pennsylvania, which I smoked one, and those should be on the website this week. Fantastic. Fantastic. Did you smoke one yet?
That's the one I smoked one the day you gave me it after I photographed it. It was really good. Yeah, I couldn't put it down. Yeah.
I smoked it to the nub too.
Yeah. And also kind of going back to what you were just saying about being in a tough spot. It's also tough for retailers to like project in March how their summer is going to be essentially. Yeah. Right. So that's another thing too. It is such a weird time right now. And I feel like from the cigar manufacturers, makers standpoint, you're kind of in a rock and a hard place because you have all this overstock possibly, but the new thing you could see in the world is just like trying to keep up with the Joneses. Like what's the next best thing? So it's really, really tough, you know, when you start kind of like, you know it more than I do. So when I start dissecting things like this, where it's like for any company to stay relevant, I think is extremely tough because how are you going to get new consumers in, but also meet your numbers and this and that. But for, you know, since we're both smoking Crown Heads, I did an interview with Danny this year, who used to work at the Casa in Nashville, now works for Crown Heads. You know, they have all these sales reps across, you know, the Midwest and the East Coast. So these guys are traveling, busting their ass, trying to sell, like really sell hard. And that's every company like that. So I feel like these, you know, what do you call them? The salesmen or salespeople, they're really busting their ass to get, you know, get this product in stores.
Yeah. But it's also tough, man. It's tough. I mean, listen, you also got to remember, like I said, these retailers put in their PCA orders in July, then probably did a few TPE orders to kind of restock after the holidays, like a little bit.
Yeah.
But then PCA was like a few weeks later, and it's like, well, I'm not going to put in as big of an order because when you order at a trade show because you get the deals, you order for the year. At least the smaller guys do. A lot of the smaller guys order for like the year or at least a good portion of it. It's like, I still have stuff. And now, unfortunately, they're going to run out of that coming into the summer, and they're going to have to try to put orders in. But now, I knew the first year was going to be messy. I think it was I don't know how good of a move it was. I mean,
personally, what was the reasoning for that? I know we've talked about this, reasoning?
It was tough in the summer. First of all, the heat. It was also, like I said, it was the busy season for a lot of retailers, so it sucked for them. They had to like leave their stores for 3 days. I also think maybe it was tougher getting the convention center during that time, maybe summer is like a big time for Vegas to like have these kind of trade shows.
Why not like a September? So then it can come for like December, January, and then you're good for the.
I don't know. It's going to be in New Orleans next year.
In March,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which so. I'm excited. I'm pushing to go to that because I wouldn't mind going. I
love
New Orleans.
Oh, you really?
I went to New Orleans in July, and I'm like, was terrible.
Yeah.
But New Orleans in March, especially with like
post Mardi Gras,
especially with Jim, because like Jim is a guy I can attach myself to at a thing like this. And I'm like, he's not going to drag me to any place where I need to get hammered or it's going to be crazy. Yeah, yeah. He's going to be the first one out. And I'm like, and I'm right behind. Like, great. We can get out of here. Because the last time I went to New Orleans, I was 25 and it was for that PCA, or at the time it was IPCPR. And it was. I got in some shenanigans.
Yeah,
nothing bad, but
but it's New Orleans.
I shenanigized the whole time.
Yeah, last time I went to New Orleans, I was 26 for like a graduation present, and that was pretty cool. And then I went another time with my buddies, From Florida, and that was just debauchery.
That's
like
that's when you go to New Orleans.
Yeah,
you go at 26.
I agree.
Or if you wanted to go there for like not to get hammered, if you wanted to go because New Orleans is having some of the best cuisine, yep. best history. There's like
if you go post 30, you go with
you go
girlfriend,
as like a
wife, family, and you do the family stuff.
Yeah, just have a lot of po' boys and beignets. Go to Café Du Monde, get a beignet.
I love that place.
Oh, go on to Café Du Monde,
go
get a beignet.
Go on there.
I was playing Red Dead Redemption, and it's like one map.
Yeah.
But it has all the different like environments that you would find like during that time. So like as if you go down south, there's just like it's just like a swampy. I'm like, oh, this is supposed to be like the New Orleans.
Yeah. Spot. What year is it based in that?
1899.
Okay.
So it's like right. It's like the Old West is pretty much done. This is like these are like the last outlaws, like the last group. This is Red Dead Redemption 2. Red Dead Redemption 1 actually takes place in I think 1911. Red Dead Redemption 2 is a prequel.
Interesting. All right. So you're playing the prequel?
Yeah, but this was the bigger game. Red Dead Redemption 2 was like the biggest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's... Now I gotta say this, I'm into the game now. Like I know how to do all the stuff now. So like, it's complicated when you get into like an open world game like this, and there's so many things that at first it can be daunting. And if I don't get caught in right away, I'm gonna stop playing it because I'm like,
were you ever into Skyrim?
No, I never played Skyrim.
Yeah.
But the pain in the ass with the game is, and I'm sure there's a lot of video game fans who are like, oh, it's so realistic. I'm like, yeah, that's my problem. Like, you have to make sure to sleep, to eat, or else you, like, lose stamina and health. You got to brush your horse.
Yeah.
If it gets too hot, you got to change your clothes. If it gets too cold, you got to change your clothes.
Yeah, I've never played that game.
I'm like, dude, this sounds like, if I wanted it to be this realistic, I would, like, just go be a cowboy.
Yeah.
If I wanted to worry about that, I would just go do it. Like, I want to just shoot with cowboy weapons and, like, rob the stagecoach. Yeah. I don't want to have like, oh, stop and like grill up some meat. You need protein.
Yeah.
It's getting hot. If you don't change into something cooler, you're going to overheat and die. I'm like,
that's not fun. It's not fun.
Once you're into it, so you know everything, it took me 2 days of playing it for several hours to be like, all right, now I know what to do with the various things. But before that, I was on the cusp of just like not playing it anymore. Now I'm in it and I was able to like, I customized my guns and I did all the whole thing. So now it's like definitely more fun, but it would be even better if it wasn't for all the little, you got to shave, like your hair grows in like real time. So you got to like get haircuts and shave and all that stuff.
See, to me that like, I'm at a point where if I'm playing video games, it's just to just decompress and relax. I don't know how much I would really be enjoying that. It's like my buddies who are like in GM mode in Madden, where you do all the stuff a GM would do and play like this little much of football. I feel like Derek would love does GM mode and loves it. My buddy Steve does. I'm like,
I think there's a balance. Like I was playing Madden 22 maybe. I don't know. I bought it last year, so maybe it was 22. They had it on sale. And I was playing that and I was doing GM mode. And a lot of the stuff is cool. You can like, now GM mode doesn't really matter for me because I'm going to make all of my own players and max out their stats. Like that's what I'm, and then put them all on one team. Like that's what I'm doing.
But I don't care about how much the concession stands are.
That's the thing is like how much you want to charge for hot dogs because you got to build a bigger parking lot. It's like people actually want it. This is just business school.
Yeah.
Like go to like, this is school. By the way, War Dog is going for his NBA, and it's a cool thing. But I always thought NBA was like super high level. He's like exacerbated with it. He's like showing me questions on like his homework, and it's like Jeff has his own business. Here's his costs and like his overhead. How much does he have to charge over the next 3 months to like? And I'm like, dude, this is what we do every day. Like, this is our job. He's like, I know. It's like so mind numbing. And then I asked my buddy Louie, who's like a big finance guy, and he's like, yeah, dude, MBAs are just like, it's just another year of college. Like, it's not like your PhD.
I always thought it was
big time.
Yeah.
A lot of Italians probably getting their MBAs.
Always, always.
Money, good, Brajol, and what's A?
A.
A. Perfect. Money, good, Brajol, and A.
So many people agreed with you last week, so I'm happy about that.
A lot of Italians I sent it to, like Sausage and Peppers, was like, oh, this is spot on.
Yeah.
And then right around, did I send it to you or I showed it to somebody? Like
you
the
sent
day
it
before,
to me.
The day before we launched, other clip from another podcast was like, why is everyone doing this stuff now? And I'm like, yes, exactly.
Yeah. So the guy who asked the question and the other gentleman who was on there, I like his stuff because he really does play it up. And he's funny, like he's older Italian, but I liked their conversation about it. And then Elise messaged me from the trailer. She's like, and on top of that, how come it's okay for everyone to make fun of Italians, you know? And then other cultures are just don't get made fun of as much. And that's kind of what I was saying last week with, like, you know.
Shane Gillis even said that in the stand-up. It's like, we're the last bastion of, like, you can make fun of our ethnicity and culture.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with. Like, go ahead. Yeah. Especially at this point, we deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, back to, I want to talk about, back to what we were discussing about, like, you know, kind of state of the industry in terms of, I mean, exports were up this year as well, which is interesting, but it's softer now. I mean, you know, I'm not spilling state secrets here about, you know, but you just see it. Like you see consumers, you know, not going for total value, you know, bundles, but maybe five, but like, you know, they want something a little bit different. Like everyone's feeling this economy right now.
Oh yeah. I think varietal five packs are the way to go. Like we do
samplers,
our top five samplers.
And also, and listen, when it works out for them, great. But instead of going to a more budget conscious, you know, choice, you have some guys, Crown Heads included. And listen, it's a fantastic cigar and worth the money, but actually pushing up well into that next price point, like with the La Vereda, going to that $20 price point. You know, Plasencia did that. Like, they came out of the gate with their first big name brand, the Alma Fuerte, just in that $20 price point, you know? So a lot of guys are pushing up into that, and I'm like, I'm seeing the market starting to tip the other way. Again, you don't want to just put out, like, garbage, but, you know, you make the best cigar you can for the best price, having that option, like a Charter Oak or an Umbagog option. Now, for Crown Heads, most of their stuff is already priced exceptionally well.
I was gonna say that.
I think those are, I don't know what the Cornettes are, I gotta look. Oh, maybe they're like 12 or 13, but like a lot of stuff is like they have $10, you know. And again, for a boutique shop, like 10-11 bucks is great.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, for, you know, because don't forget they have to go through all the whole bunch of other process. But dude, long gone are the days where like a $9 cigar was the fancy one. And when I say long gone, I mean like past 5 years, probably, maybe six. It's tough all over. And so we have to, you know, figure out ways.
I went to a cigar lounge for this past, like a few months ago. I think it was President's Day weekend. And I was just asking the guy, you know, I was like, I didn't mention I worked for, you know, JR or anything. I was just talking to him and his selection was pretty like obvious for what like a small cigar lounge would be. You know, you had a bunch of Padron, Ashton, Camacho, the Cuba, you know, acids. And I was asking him about, I don't think there was Foundation in there. I think maybe the El Wawense was in there. But I just said, like, oh, do you guys carry this? And like Crown Heads was like, no, never really even heard of them. And it's kind of like, that was more interesting to me.
Was it a
too.
Shop or it was a lounge?
Shop and lounge. It was a shop/lounge. So there's like one
house. What was their focus? Like, what was, if you
that's
had
a good
say,
question. I would
say
their focus was it was the lounge and the experience.
Yeah.
I would say that because their humidor wasn't as big as I've seen before. And I haven't gone into it yet, but there's a cigar lounge or a cigar shop right down the road from where I live. And I've peeked in there and it's just, I need, every time I pass by, I'm like, why don't I stop in there? So I think if I'm doing it, like if I'm just after work one day, it's literally right down the road. I'm like, let me just stop in. Yeah. It's not a lounge. It's just straight up just shop.
Yeah, let's see what they are.
Yeah.
And then,
I think it's called like Medusa Cigars. It's off like Route 1.
I always, if I see a new cigar shop, I always, unless I'm like traveling to somewhere specific, but I always, if I'm just driving around, I always stop in and just like ask them, what's moving for you? Like, how's it going? You know, like, what are your big focuses?
Yeah.
Like, what are you seeing? Just because even our retail stores are, it's just different than really how the rest of the market and the, you know, the rest of the, yeah, of the brick and mortar retail market works.
And that's what I was saying. I think that the their humidor was more geared towards, because I looked around the lounge, I was one of the younger people there. So they're it's probably geared towards people who've been smoking cigars for years. Yeah. You know, and the pricing wasn't too bad. I did see some good brands there that were under $10. So I was like, oh, like I was like, all right. And then I saw some other brands that were way up there, and I was like, in my mind, I'm like, I don't smoke like a $16 or a $17 cigar, you know.
What brands did you think did you see that were like over, like well over what you think they should have been sold for? This Blood Medicine is fantastic in this size. Holy shit.
In my honest opinion, I believe I saw like, I think it was a La Roma de Cuba that was like $25.
No way.
$21. It was up there. Not 25, $21.
Those are like nine now. Maybe they're not. They used to be, yeah, that used to be a $5 cigar when in the store. Like, and it was a tremendous value. It still, yeah, is, because you know it's just inflation. But I want to say
I was pushing 20 at least.
Unless it was one of the fancy ones, but like the traditional, like with the red band, La Roma de Cuba.
Yeah, that's like what it was. Yeah, that was a little up there. Mm.
We have to view things, because even our stores, yeah, how we buy like all this stuff, it's very different than a mom and pop shop.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like. You know, a private label to a mom and pop shop could be life changing, which is why you can't really give one to one, because.
But I wonder how many of those mom and pop shops are going to like a PCA or like are tapped in like that. They should, in my mind, they should be.
It's for like, it's, yeah, it's not for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not for like, we don't need to go. Like we still get show deals and whatever. So it's not for us. Like, they all should,
yeah,
be there. I mean, if it's to their benefit. When everyone's talking about all these changes for PCA, I mean, listen, the cigar manufacturers definitely have a say. They're the ones literally paying for PCA. Like, you know, they shoulder a lot of the financial responsibility, so they should have a say. But really, in terms of any, like, changes, it's for really brick-and-mortar, mm-hmm, shop owners. So it should be tasked to them, like, what changes do you want to see? And then if the changes are ridiculous, then like, all right, you know, yeah, we can't do that. But, you know, what they're the ones, like, we're in chats with our reps all the time. This show, what it started out at and what it still is to an extent, you might have a decently sized cigar shop in Montana, but like, Nick Melillo ain't going there. Like, yeah, nor does he have a rep that's there. John Huber ain't going there. Pete Johnson can't really get, like, no, maybe like once every 5 or 6 years. Whereas like, we have people coming through here every week. There's somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with our competitors, CI and those guys. And
if they're not coming through here, or, I feel like, or you guys are meeting, yeah, with people.
Or the big shops that are like, you know, like Sanjay's in, uh-huh, Bloomfield. Yep. Like, yeah. But he's in North Jersey. It's like, a rep flies in here. They're hitting 15 big shops in like 2 or 3 days. Like, they, yeah, can do that. But, you know, those kind of isolate, or you know, this one's actually cool. It's R Field Wine Co. out in Hawaii. They're like a liquor cigar store. They're like a chain. Like, when guys go out there, like this one company basically has like a monopoly on Hawaii. They get all these cool, they get the Paniolo, yeah, from Crown Heads. They get one from Pete Johnson. They get all these cool, like,
that's private, awesome, yeah.
But like, when somebody goes out there, it's like a big event that they have to do, because like, who's flying to Hawaii?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the trade show is, all of the vendors are here, so everybody can come here, talk to them about upcoming projects, mm-hmm, schedule events. With the advent of email and cell phones, I mean, I want to say that took a big chunk out of like why people needed to come to the trade show, to be honest. But the other important part is seeing the new product, you know, having legitimate talks, you know, meeting these people sometimes for the first time, you know, a networking event essentially. But I don't know. It's just, even this year, I heard it was fine. Like, uh-huh, maybe just find a new purpose for it. You know, if it's not just deals on and also like new products, you got to slow down with that.
I mean,
like, people don't realize that you can't keep chasing, and I'm not trying to use a drug analogy, you can't keep chasing the dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to realize you got to take 1 year where it's going to kind of suck in order to reset everything. So people who are like, here's our new core line, it's this thing. Yeah. And then sales go up and then they start coming down because it's not the new thing anymore. It's like, oh, we got to come out with another new thing.
I think anything big like that, you take that approach, you know, to like, I think this year there's only one Marvel movie coming out and it's Deadpool 3.
Yeah. If
you know, like, so you just want to, I think you kind of want people coming back for more. It's just, there's so much supply and demand in this industry.
And I've talked to John about this, and unfortunately it's this cycle now where just to like stay relevant, you have to kind of do this. And that's a real shame. Like the industry as a whole, it's like, you know, take a reset year where, you know, focus on core line. The unfortunate part about that is because how customers are trained now and consumers are trained. Well, if you don't release something new, this guy's something new, it's going to go to him.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate. There's almost like starting to be like this lack of brand loyalty. But I think as an industry, we need to reset, get back to core line, get back to stabilization. A limited edition should be exactly that. It should be a limited, oh, it pops up once in a while, et cetera, et cetera. Even seasonal ones like Las Calaveras. I like the concept of Las Calaveras a lot better than, you know, 15 other LEs that all these other companies are releasing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a seasonal thing. You get it this one time a year. We make a decent amount of it. And so it's basically a core line that changes everything.
Listen, yeah, I mean, this is probably going off the beaten path a little bit. And letting people into, like, the workings of what we do in terms of posting and whatnot. But I was mapping out posts for the rest of the year for like our Instagram, and one of them is going to feature like limited editions for, you know, Crown Heads. And you think about how many limited editions like they do that are just amazing, like and we, you know, we're fortunate enough to have a lot of them in here. And I think that just goes to show, you know, you mentioned earlier, I wanted to say this after you mentioned the La Vereda being like a $21 smoke, you know. It's tough to, I understand why he's doing that, but for years he's always been a very budget friendly for a lot
budget of, friendly for a boutique.
Yes, for a boutique, you know. So if, like, for Crown Heads, it makes sense, and I feel like even another close friend of ours, Nick Melillo. I think, you know, if he were ever to make something in that price range a little bit more expensive, I think it would be kind of like
the Knights Commander.
Yes,
and I can never remember the pronunciation, the Egyptian one.
This Centigier? Centigier?
Centigier, yeah.
Centigier?
Those were like 20, but those were like, you were getting a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting a pretty big rollout with that. Yeah. So,
yeah, but it's going to be interesting the next few. I mean, we're definitely in a transitionary era right now where we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. My recommendation, and this is the thing, sometimes you got to teach people, like your customers, or, you know, in your case, if you're running a government, like citizens, like, we got to take a little bit of a break. Like, if you want it to be as good as it can be, like, you got to calm down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, now we don't, you know, it'd be great to have like 2 years to work on a new product, getting the blends down perfectly, aging them properly, really fine tuning the boxes and the packaging. And a lot of companies do that, but they're working on so many that, like, you know, John might be starting one now for 2 years from now, but he has the ones for next year already lined up. So, but it's like,
do you think it would have been beneficial if after 2023, PCA, they took 2024 off, right? So like 2023 was the last year in Vegas.
I mean, the PCA couldn't afford to do that. That's their moneymaker for the whole organization.
True.
They can't afford to take it off. Now they just kind of double dipped for 6 months, but now they're not going to have really anything until next year. But that entire organization is funded by that event.
By that event, okay.
Which comes down to, like, that's the financial point of that event. But the facade, not the facade, but like the face of that event, which is vendors and customers coming together to do all these things, that is losing steam. So they need to figure out that part of it better. The real reason this event happens is the PCA, which is, you know, like kind of like, you know, our lobbyists, you know, labor organization that goes and fights against the FDA, and they do a great job along with the CRA and a lot of these organizations. But this is essentially like their fundraising event in a nutshell.
Okay.
Between
then never mind.
the vendors paying and the consumers paying. Like, it's not like if they wanted to send me, like, it's not cheap to send someone. It's like just to, for access to the thing, it's a couple $100 a person. Oof, that's not including like your flights, your hotel. Like that's not included. You got to do that separately. So just access to the floor plus the floor space, you know, it's per square foot or whatever that you're paying for. So they make money on this event, which like they should. That's the point of it. I get it. I have no argument on that. But I don't know. I would be interested to see, you know, more time taken on core lines. And this is not like the manufacturers don't want it to be like this. They have to keep up with the market and the consumer trends. I get that. But if enough people started like slowing down a little bit and again, making things that are sustainable, like we know we're going to have enough tobacco. I would love to have another show. Jim made some really good points on that, like the sustainability of tobacco and your inventory and et cetera, to make sure you have 5 years or 6 years. A lot of boutique guys can't do that. People who do it really well, John does it really well. Nick and Steve do it phenomenally well. But a lot of guys don't, and it's a problem. You get consistency issues. You got to change things about the blend, you know, especially with, you know, when it comes to broadleaf. But that's
our other boutique, really quickly to end it off on this. Like you mentioned John, Nick, and Steve, who've been in the industry 20 years, 15. Do you think like newer boutique brands, like they could take a page out of their book almost and just kind of see how they do it?
Ferrotego is a newer boutique company, but Mike's been in this game since he was a kid, essentially. So like he knows. And Mike actually Mike does not release a new, like he had the Generoso and the Elegancia when he launched,
and
he didn't have anything new until Suma like 2 years later. So that's a guy who focuses on core. And John does. I'm not saying these guys don't focus on core, but they have to add in these extra things all the time to get people to focus on core. It's like the consumer has ADD now. And it's the proverbial chicken or the egg. Did we as an industry create this need for limited editions and stuff, or did the consumers create it? And I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest, but we'll see. Yeah. But in my mind, focus on build a solid core. I like trying different things. If I could find a consistent cigar like that I absolutely love, that's right up my alley, like I would buy more boxes. I would buy boxes at a good price, a reliable cigar day in and day out, you know, but we'll see what the future holds, but that's all we got. I think we have some interviews coming up. I don't know who. We got people coming through.
Yeah.
We're like fucking Grand Central Station over here now. But thank you everyone for watching. Make sure to comment, like, and subscribe. And as always, keep it lit.